Welcome back to the Spoken Word Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Vanderlist, and for today's episode, we have something that's new and hopefully the first of many to come. Rather than reading a blog post from one of the many fantastic woodworking-related weblogs on the internet, we instead have an excerpt from Ron Hock's The Perfect Edge Sharpening for Woodworkers, recorded by Ron himself. Now, if you don't have a copy of The Perfect Edge yet, after today's episode, you may just reconsider that little oversight. So if you like today's excerpt and you want to find more of Ron's writings, well, you can look at his weblog, The Sharpening Blog, at hocktools.wordpress.com. And of course, I'll have links in the show notes to get you there that much quicker. So without further delay, let's get on with the show.
Do-it-yourself heat treatment of tool steel. I'm Ron Hock from Hock Tools. The following is an excerpt from my book, The Perfect Edge, The Ultimate Guide to Sharpening for Woodworkers. You can successfully harden your own tools with a little knowledge, some heat, and a known alloy of steel. That's often the hardest part. What steel have I got here, and which quenchant do I use? The steel used in any given tool is not an easy thing to determine. A metallurgical laboratory charges a fair amount of money to test for alloy, and there is no surefire home test kit that I know of. Also, there is some risk in quenching, say, an oil-hardening steel in water. It could warp like crazy, or worse, it could fracture. The old-timers sparked steels to tell what was in them. The sparks generated from a grinder will burn with different visual characteristics depending on the alloying elements, like the different mineral colorants in fireworks. So you can grind a corner of the steel in question, observe the sparks, then grind a known steel and try to compare the little spark flares for shape, brightness, complexity, etc., and then attempt a match. For the do-it-yourselfer, the most common issue will be whether a piece of steel, car spring, old saw, whatever, is oil or water hardening. It is safer to quench an unknown, perhaps water hardening steel in oil than vice versa. The water hardening steel may not fully harden in the oil, and if that's the case, the chemistry and physics let you try again in water. I know this sounds cautionary, and that's because it is. Although I am wary of giving false hope to do-it-yourselfers, I also know it is possible to harden steels on your own. When I was making knives from saw blades, I clobbered together a high-temperature oven and an oil bath, like a deep fryer, for hardening and tempering on a very tight budget and managed to do a respectable job of heat treating over 1,000 knives. I learned a lot about the process through trial and error, building and rebuilding and fine-tuning the gear. I still keep my hand in for simple small jobs in the shop and for curiosity testing on a small scale, but I now let the pros handle our production heat treating. With our current batch sizes, they do a much more consistent, uniform job than I could do with my shoestring setup. The first step is to get the metal to its critical temperature, which with good old O1, the oil hardening stuff, is 1450 to 1500 degrees Fahrenheit, 790 to 815 Celsius. Got a good pyrometer? No problem. Two events signal the transformation of perlite, the low-temperature iron crystal, to austenite. One is a sudden leap in the color of the red-hot steel. As the piece approaches critical temperature, the red glow that starts around 1200 F or 650 C will visibly brighten until the piece approaches 1400 F, 760 C. It will then remain at that color while the perlite converts to austenite. Once that transformation is complete, the color suddenly jumps to a much brighter orange. Recognizing that color change can take some experience, though. It may not be that obvious to the novice. Lucky for you, austenite is not magnetic. The point at which plain high-carbon steel ceases to be magnetic is its critical temperature. Because of this handy fact of physics, you can simply heat the metal until a magnet is no longer attracted to it, then quench it in oil. There are commercially available quench oils, but for simplicity's sake, I use peanut oil. Peanut oil has a very high flash point that reduces the risk of fire, and it smells nicer than a petroleum oil when it smokes. Now let me put on my safety hat here and just tell you about the fire danger alert. Safety first. The risk of fire here is very real. Flames plus red-hot metal plus hot oil equals danger. Be prepared. Use long tongs to handle the work. Wear gloves and eye and face protection and keep your fire extinguisher handy. If you're doing this in the shop or garage, turn on a fan and don't be surprised when the smoke alarm sounds off. If you're doing this in the house, call a divorce lawyer. So how to get the blade to the curie point is probably the biggest problem for the do-it-yourselfers. As the metal passes 1300 F, 700 C, or so, the carbon behaves as if it's in a liquid and can therefore migrate around as it pleases. This is necessary for the hardening to occur, but near the surface of the metal, those carbon atoms become fickle and would just as soon run off with any available oxygen atoms they encounter, lost forever to their new relationship as atmospheric carbon dioxide. We attempt to prevent this decarburization of the steel by heating the metal in an inert, oxygen-free environment, or by severely limiting the time at red heat. An oxyacetylene torch, which is often the heat source of choice for the do-it-yourselfer, makes the former impossible and the latter very difficult. It's a real challenge to heat something as large as a plane blade evenly with a small torch-generated spot of heat. A forge fire is better than a torch because of its uniformity, and it can be starved for air just a bit to decrease the oxygen in the immediate vicinity. A small lab-type test oven, or a kiln used for ceramic glaze tests, works quite well, although you may not be able to observe the color changes as the steel is heating. Toss in a charcoal briquette to scavenge some of the oxygen from inside the oven while the steel is in it. The best solution to the carbon burnout problem for the do-it-yourself heat treater is to coat the steel with an occlusive powder coating like those available from www.rosemill.com. The powder is applied to the part that's been preheated to 450 degrees Fahrenheit, 230 degrees Celsius. The part is then returned to the heat to finish the process. The coating washes off with water after quenching. Even though the official instructions say to allow a piece to soak at critical temperature for 20 minutes per inch of cross-section, for most backyard work with a thin section, such as a knife, as soon as you're sure it has reached critical temperature, you can remove the piece from the heat and quickly dunk it into a sufficient quantity of room temperature oil. Be prepared for the oil to catch fire. Don't hold the blade in such a way that your hand or your face is directly above it. For uniform cooling, move the piece up and down in the oil. If you swirl it around, there is a risk that it will cool faster on one side, which could lead to warpage. The piece should be tempered as soon as it is cooled to about 150°F, 65°C. Without tempering, it will be very hard and too brittle to use. You can check for hardness with a file. There will probably be a thin, soft skin on the piece due to decarburization, so the file may grab that decarburized skin, which is soft. Push a little harder on the file to get through that skin, and you should find hard, non-fileable steel beneath that the file will simply skid across. Temper immediately after quenching to avoid the risk of the damage that I just mentioned. The goal is simple. Heat the part to the desired tempering temperature. There's a chart in the book. Hold it there for 20 minutes per inch of cross-section, and you're done. Knowing whether or not you've reached the right temperature may pose a problem. If you have a very accurate oven in the kitchen, and when your spouse may be out of the house for the day, just dial in the target temperature and heat the blade in the oven for the time required. An accurate deep fryer will accomplish the same result, and tempering in an oil bath works well. Again, there's a fire danger alert here. Hot oil is flammable. Do not heat the oil over an open flame. An electric fryer used outdoors is recommended. Wear appropriate clothing, protective eye and face gear, gloves, sleeves, etc. Bring your most alert brain with you along with a fire extinguisher when you're heat treating. Be careful, and if you're doing this indoors, the same divorce lawyer warning applies. Always use a reliable thermometer to double-check the oven or deep fryer's thermostat. There's no need to quench at this step, although you can. Just be sure the blade has thoroughly reached the intended temperature without exceeding that temperature. Without accurate temperature control, you'll have to use the surface oxide colors to know when enough is enough. The as-quenched piece will be black and scaly, so first, if you're tempering with a torch, use a piece of sandpaper to clean some part of the blade until it's bright metal again. When heated, that spot will change colors. You've seen the rainbow of colors that appears when steel heats. Starting with a very faint yellow called light straw, and progressing through a striking vermilion to teal, blue, and gray. Hawk Tools high-carbon plane blades are tempered to 325°F, 163°C, for a hardness of Rockwell C62. I recommend this hardness. It has worked well for us for decades, but it presents a conundrum for the do-it-yourself heat treater because the first faint hint of color will appear at a temperature just slightly higher than 325°. It's like telling a fellow passenger on the bus, get out at the stop right before mine. So my best advice is to overheat slightly to the first sign of color, the faintest of the light straw, then stop there. Your finished part may not be quite as hard as Rockwell C62, but it will be very close and should perform well. Tempering by the colors may have a long romantic blacksmith's tradition, but it's not as effective as an oven or an oil bath that allows the steel to soak for the optimal time to allow full transformation. Start heating away from the cutting edge. Apply the torch flame sparingly and allow the colors to run to the edge. You may have to quench the piece to arrest any further increase in temperature. Any color beyond the faintest straw is too much. The blade will still work, it just won't hold its edge as long as you may like. Be overly cautious with tempering. You can always retemper a too hard blade, but if you go too far and soften it too much, you have to reharden it all over again. If a blade seems too hard, you can always toss it back in the oven and let it go another 25 degrees hotter, holding it there for a few minutes before removing it from the heat. If you're using the oil bath deep fryer method for tempering, the blade won't present the tempering colors because the oil prevents oxygen from creating the colorful oxides on the steel surface. Trust the thermometer and the method, remove the blade from the oil or just turn off the heat and let it cool. You're done. If the blade looks awful, you can sandblast or grind it pretty, but it should work well regardless. If you've made a plain iron or a chisel, be sure to grind back the bevel a bit before honing. Without protective coating or atmosphere control, that thin edge probably received more than its fair share of carbon burnout abuse, and you need to get down to the good steel. The decarburized layer may be as thick as 25 thousandths. The same goes for the back. Careful honing of the back is at least, if not more, important than honing the bevel. A little extra elbow grease will remove the decarbed layer and expose the hardened steel. Don't forget, the back is the cutting edge. Think about it. If the back hasn't been honed deeply enough, the blade will never work well. That's it for this excerpt from The Perfect Edge. This is Ron Hawk from Hawk Tools. Thanks for listening.